The path of campaign finance regulation has been long and twisted, leading all the way back to Watergate. Picture this. The year? 1971. The place? The White House. The industry using illegal campaign money to grease the wheels? Big Milk. Here's NPR's Peter Overby.
If you go to the Watergate tapes, you can hear Nixon meeting with the milk producers in the cabinet room, joshing with them. And then later that same day, there's a tape of an Oval Office meeting with Nixon and his advisors. They all agree that the milk subsidy isn't going to be cut, it's going to be raised. At the end of the tape, John Ehrlichman, the domestic advisor, makes a joke about, let's all go get a glass of milk while it's still cheap. And everybody laughs.
Very funny. But that encounter with Big Milk was a big scandal at the time, right?
The milk producers wanted to give $2 million to help Nixon get reelected. That was a scandal. Then, as now, direct contributions from corporations to political campaigns was illegal.
And that led to the creation of the Federal Election Commission?
Right. You had several laws coming through Congress as the Watergate scandal evolved. First was disclosure by the candidate committees and the party committees. Then laws that encouraged the rise of political action committees. Things stayed on an even keel for a few election cycles. And then in the late 80s, you had the rise of soft money, corporate money and union money and money from rich individuals going to the party committees.
In reaction to that, there was the great bipartisan effort known as McCain-Feingold.
The way to look at it is the Watergate-era laws set limits on the amount of money and the kind of money that could come into federal election campaigns. Soft money was a way around that. McCain-Feingold cut off the flow of soft money. As soon as McCain-Feingold became law, there were efforts to poke holes in it, and it's been gradually perforated.
Okay, so one of the ways it was weakened, I believe, was the rise of, and I wish these things didn't all have numbers attached to them, groups called 527s. One of them famously gave rise to the term swift voting. How did they work around McCain-Feingold, and do they still matter?
The appealing thing about them was that they had no contribution limits. They could spend as much as they wanted from any source they wanted on mostly attack ads. And in the early days, there was no disclosure. Politicians on both sides were targeted. They didn't like it. Congress passed a law forcing disclosure. After that, a lot of the outside money shifted to another type of group, the 501c4 issue advocacy groups.
Wait a minute. I think I know those. Those are those tax-exempt groups that are not supposed to devote the majority of their money to political ads, right?
To political spending, yeah. The way 501c4s are working nowadays, a lot of them, they are running attack ads during campaign season. And during the off season, they're running ads on legislation in Congress, tying it to certain incumbents or certain parties. So the message is a partisan slash ideological message. But it's not crossing over the line what would be considered campaign express advocacy messaging.
What I learned essentially from Stephen Colbert is that if you create one of these entities, you can funnel that non-disclosed money into the super PAC, and all anybody needs to know is that it came from that 501c4.
Right. There are several super PACs that have 501c4s running alongside them. American Crossroads is one. Crossroads GPS is the C4 sidekick. There's a Rick Perry super PAC that has a 501c4 connected to it. And the super PAC that's supporting President Obama also has a C4 connected to it.
So again, just as the description of what constitutes campaign ads is pretty much meaningless, so it seems is this disclosure requirement. What with the creation of these non-disclosing sidekick organizations that can funnel money. So every restriction is basically zeroed out by a loophole practically from the outset.
And in fact, the coming battle over political money is whether there should be as much disclosure as there has been. There's a big push on the conservative side to limit disclosure, saying that the message is the important thing and the electorate doesn't gain anything, really, by knowing who's behind the message.
Do you think when we look back, the election of 2012 will seem like the Wild West?
It seems that way now. I'm not sure that by the time we get to 2016 or 2020, it's still going to look that way. There's a steady evolution in the judicial thinking away from anti-corruption rationale that was prevalent in the 70s and toward the ascendancy of First Amendment free speech rights. With the justices that are on the Supreme Court, it seems like the die is cast for things to continue that way for quite a while.
So you're talking about potentially going from the wild, wild west to Mad Max.
No comment.
Okay, Peter, thank you very much.
Sure. Glad to do it.
Peter Overby is the greatest title in NPR history, NPR's power, money, and influence correspondent.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.